to Marvel Noise. I'm your host, David Price. Thank you for joining me today. You are going to hear from Steve, Kevin, Andrew, and Phil. They're going to talk about some Original Sins, as well as the All-New Invaders, some Daredevil, some Deadpool, some Spider-Man 2099. That's probably the reason I haven't talked about that series. New Avengers, and more. I read a couple things. Well, I did watch the season premiere of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I thought the series is off to a really good start. New status quo, if you want to call it that. But basically, they're just the things that are going to, well, moving forward from the end of last season, from Captain America: The Winter Soldier, there have been changes to the team and to the people on the team, and there have been some additions. And there was an introduction to two bad guys. One surprised me somewhat, but it was really cool to have a flashback there. The other one was amazing, and Crusher Creel is no joke in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I was quite impressed, and I love the little ball and chain they gave us as well. But it was a great episode, and I'm looking forward to what comes next, and there will be some fallout from this episode as we move forward, I'm sure. So I'm stoked. I'm glad it's back, and I will definitely be checking it out every week. And apparently some people weren't keen on it. I've avoided those conversations, surprisingly and thankfully, but it was more of the same, more of the good same, and moved us forward. So I win-win as far as I'm concerned. I'm all about it. I did read the first issue of the new creative team on Moon Knight, Wood and Smallwood, and there was unless I'm mistaken, we may actually finally have somewhat of a continuing storyline. The first six issues were fantastic and pretty much self-contained, and you can look for an overall narrative, but pretty much each issue in and out and told you a complete story and moved it along, and you got the next issue and so on. But this one, the last page, kind of leads me to think that we may see more of what was introduced, I'll say. But it looked great. Still kind of had that Ellis feel, but Wood did a fantastic job keeping Mr. Knight as he was introduced, and I appreciate that. Smallwood, Greg's work, a little different than Declan's, but it's still it's a natural progression. He gives it its own look, but still keeping with the I guess the aesthetics. I don't even know if I could say that, but it's comfortable. It's familiar yet new. So I think that is that's a good thing. I am really looking forward to the next issue and the issues to come. I'm psyched for that. I read the latest issue of Ms. Marvel, 7, I think, with Lockjaw on the cover, because Lockjaw should followed Kamala home. And again, Afona's art is amazing. It wasn't so much that it was an issue of character growth. It wasn't like the opening arc where we were getting to know everybody. We're still getting to know some people, some of the characters, some of the supporting cast in Kamala's life. But it was a the issue itself move things along, and I need to find out what the hell that last page is about. The art is amazing, like I said, and Wilson is just, there isn't a character she's writing in this book that everybody serves a purpose, and whether it's a teacher or a friend or a parent, it's good stuff. I really do recommend Miss Marvel. If you haven't checked it out yet, please do. You're doing yourself a disservice by not reading it. You may not be a fan of the setting, because it does take place in Jersey, and you may not know much about the background of the main character. But that's okay. It's cool to learn, and it's respectful, and I look forward to it whenever it comes out. It is right there towards the top of my stack, and I am I dig it. I really do. I was reading before I started recording Thor God of Thunder number 25, the God-sized final issue of that series before the new series kicks off with the new Thor. I haven't finished it. I am right up to the Simon Bisley art, and it is gorgeous. R.M. Guerra did the first story about Malekith, and it was a sight, and some more about that character's origins, which are quite interesting. There's the framing sequence, which looks great, because that's by Ribic, and it's Thor's granddaughter's reading in the Great Library, and basically the stories told in the issue can be found within the library walls and on the pages of the books in the library. So they're reading that along, and they're reading it and you're following along, and it's a pretty cool storytelling device. It's one that I approve of. If you listen to 11 O'Clock Comics this week, you know that we are pretty much current on Spider-Verse and Superior Spider-Man and Amazing Spider-Man, and that is all good times, good stuff. We've said before that Slott is killing it, and he still is. There's no real letting up there, and I'm happy for it. I can't get enough of that, and Slott is owning that corner of the Marvel Universe. He's kicking ass on the flagship, and he just we're all along for a fantastic ride, and I really couldn't be happier. And the Spider-Verse, you know, it brings me back to Otto as Spider-Man, and I'm fine with that. The art by Camicoli is amazing. The three issues of Spider-Verse, Edge of Spider-Verse, the first issue, of course, was featuring Spider-Man Noir with art by Richard Isenov, co-written by David Hine, and you have, of course, Latour and Rodriguez doing Spider-Woman with Gwen, and then the third is by Mr. Dustin Weaver, and that is a Spider-Man who I'm not too familiar with, but I am. I'd like to see more, especially drawn by Weaver. God, it looks amazing. So that is pretty much where I'm at. When I'm done here, I'm going to finish Death Thor. I have some Secret Avengers to catch up on. I've really fallen behind on that, and I did read some All New X-Men. That was good, because the cover, though, is a little misleading with the whole welcome Miles to the X-Men, hope you survived the experience. That's not quite what I was expecting from looking at the cover, so I I have some other X-Men to read as well. I have some Uncanny X-Men to get back to. So I have a few things to read. I'm going to let the guys do their thing. They're going to finish up, and we'll be back in a couple weeks. Actually, I have to look at the schedule, because the weekend after next is New York Comic Con, so we may be skipping a week. Then we can do somewhat of a con recap. But in any case, I'm going to let the guys do their thing. I will talk to you all later. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.
Up and down a puffin' sail, fleas and ticks jump everywhere. Summer engine on sand. Down the hill fell Jack and Jill, and you came tumbling after.
Sinners, Saintly Steve Raker here, offering redemption from the comic book bunker, joined again by Andrew the L.A. Rabbit, Kevin Whirlwind X, and Phil.
Ottawa Otter.
Hey, these guys, let's face it, each have skeletons of their own in their closets.
I don't think any of them are that original, though, Steve.
My con season is finally over. Time to get back on track here with some of our regular type segments. And one of the things that I've caught up on is the Original Sin event and its correlated titles and stuff. So I thought we could do a little roundtable and kind of pass judgment on what some of the sins that came out of this thing were.
Well,
First,
Steve, can I make you roll your eyes at me?
Oh, boy.
I'd like to say this is my favorite Nick Fury story ever.
Interesting.
Oof.
That didn't make you roll your eyes?
You don't like the one where he's in basic training.
Personally. I probably haven't read that one.
You know, the sins, original sin, the idea of this, at one point, the Watcher's eyes explode like a truth bomb across the scattered heroes and surrounded civilians in New York City on the street. And a whole bunch of significant acts that had been covered up or lied about, the original sins, so to speak, are revealed to various people. Mm-hmm. And we got a collection, about 14, 15 of these revelations, so to speak, that were presented to us either in the Original Sin series itself or in the ancillary titles. To tie into it, you had to come up with a sin, right? So let's see which ones rose to...
You were supposed to come up with the sin. Not all of them did it. But we should say, too, this is going to be spoiler heavy, I imagine. So if you're waiting for the trades, you might not want to listen to this yet.
But you know, if the sins didn't really work out and they weren't really a sin, then they're not ruining any character potentially either. So that's kind of a trade-off, too. So,
as I came across the sins as I was reading things, I jotted them down. And one that I came across that seemed the biggie revealed right after the bomb eyeball bombs went off is that it was revealed that Tony Stark, Iron Man, he sabotaged Bruce Banner's original faded gamma bomb experiment that caused him to become the Hulk in the first place. Are you kidding?
I thought that was aliens.
What was his involvement? I didn't read that one.
He tinkered with things because he was being, you know, elitist and holier than thou and thinking that he had it all figured out and whatnot. And they have a big fight about it. And I don't want to totally spoil the all the little detail things.
It sounds reasonable, though, to me.
It might interest you and you might want to check it out. Yeah, that's my thought.
Steve, I think you're confusing this with Fantastic Four number one.
There's a big fight that lasted several issues of their little tie-in, which was Original Sins like 3.1, 2, and 3 or something like that. But when it all ends, they kind of come to terms with each other. Well, I'll leave it at that. Another sin, you say, like Fantastic Four and Fantastic Four number 6 of their new series, was revealed that another sabotage of an experiment took place.
Oh, yes.
Johnny Storm sabotaged an old attempt of Reed's to change the thing back into Ben.
Really? That old chestnut?
That seems a little out of character to me. I don't know. Because for people who love each other that much, you know, it's not something you would do. I haven't read that issue yet, but
yeah, but I think people forget, like, that comic, that was like a like every other issue was Reed cooking up some wacky formula that didn't work or only worked on Tuesday or only worked, but this time he had to go back because they'd all die. If, like, that used to be like the bread and butter of that book was a lot of the, can we get Ben Grimm back to normal? And they really just sort of dropped that storyline probably, what, 30 years ago?
Yeah, this was the one way that was going to work, though, and you can only try it one time. Just like you said, it has all the conceits of the Silver Age, you know, book there. And what happened was everything was all calibrated for the thing to sit in the chair, and Johnny sat in the chair, you know, after hours before the experiment took place, and the chair was unrecalibrated, and when the thing gets in it, he got all morphed out, crazy looking, and he was really in pain. And what seems to have ticked him off even more is the fact that after it was revealed to Reed what happened, when Johnny admitted it to Reed, first Reed totally lashed out at him, but when he saw how you know, repentant Johnny was and how he really didn't mean it was a total accident, he basically says, you know what, let's just keep it at that and shut up about this, and I'll take the blame for screwing up this experiment once again and not helping out my friend. So
let's
Ben's
face
pissed.
It, Reed keeps a lot of secrets.
Yeah, so Ben's pissed that they kept it from him all these years.
Basically. Wait, was it would be all right as long as Reed was smoking a pipe when he yelled at Johnny.
All right, another original sin in Nova, number 18. It was revealed, you know, one of the things about the Nova series is it's a legacy kind of a book. He's inherited his dad's helmet, and his dad is out there somewhere. He thought dead, but his pal, the Watcher, alluded to him that his dad is out there alive somewhere. His dad, the hero of the Nova Corps. Well, we learn here, or Nova learns, that his father lied. He was no hero, but he was a bad guy. He and a couple of other rogue Nova agents were pretty much like, you know, gunrunners and that kind of a thing in outer space.
Hmm. That's a low blow.
I like it. So far, I'm liking all these sins.
It seems like he would have had, I mean, he must have been the worst gunrunner if he doesn't have anything to show for it. You know what I mean?
Well, like, he's missing. So now you're wondering whether he's incarcerated somewhere, possibly, for something that he deserved to be incarcerated for. It adds all these things to Nova, to Nova's teenage mind, that he's all of a sudden seeing his, you know, it's a metaphor for seeing your dad for human, beyond that glorified vision of him as you become a teenager, that kind of thing.
I'm guessing he's going to be some sort of space pirate or something.
No, there will be some redemption arc.
Yeah, but you think that what we know, what Kevin and I know about the Marvel Universe is villains bury piles of cash all around. So you should just tell him, give him a shovel and say, go up to Wyoming, I buried some cash here, and the family will be taken care of.
Yes, Andrew, yes!
In Deadpool, there was a two-part revelation because there were two people who were standing there and got blasted with some truths about Deadpool. One is the LMD, who is the S.H.I.E.L.D. agent Preston, who is a black woman who, for quite a few issues, was trapped inside Deadpool's head with him, like the old Lily Tomlin, Steve Martin movie. And now she's in an LMD, and she learned that Deadpool has a daughter, Ellie, who's like probably like, you know, like 8 or 9 years old or something. And he learns about this and that some bad guys know about it too, and he has to basically protect her and make sure that she's okay wherever she is. And so they kind of go on a hunt, the bad guys, Deadpool, and Agent Preston, to try to locate her.
I guess it's okay.
That sounds like a fitting one for Deadpool. Boring.
But it connects to this other sort of familial thing, which the guy, the other S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, who's kind of a jerk, who is standing with Agent Preston, he learns that Deadpool murdered his parents by torching their house while they slept.
Now we're talking.
Okay. But then as they learn more, this was in Deadpool 32, and in Deadpool 34, Preston and this agent learn that Deadpool was actually, when he was being kind of controlled and mind wiped after missions, so he's done this to his own parents and he doesn't know. So they decide what they're going to do with that information. basically. In original series, original sin, the series itself, why don't we get to the big one? You alluded to this being your favorite Nick Fury story, Phil. The fact that there is such a thing as a man on the wall, and that Fury's been the man on the wall all these years, having his LMDs do all his appearances planet side for him, is one big revelation, right?
Yeah, definitely. And that is, an old man. Really, I loved it. I think, I'm not one to pick up Winter Soldier, but now I know I'm going to for sure, just because I'm really digging this wall stuff. I think it's a really cool concept. I know it won't hit with everyone, but...
Yeah, he's an old man because this was like the last Nick Fury story, basically, and he, as an old man having the Infinity Formula run through his system a long time ago, is also we're confronted with the lie that... he did the same thing to his Howlers, the Howling Commandos that we've seen that kind of grew up through S.H.I.E.L.D. and chased Godzilla and all that, that it wasn't dumb at all, but it's been an LMD all these years.
Yep.
That's a little too far for me. But as long as they don't mention it again, I never have to know that it's an LMD because I'll just think it's the regular guy.
Well, I doubt Dum Dum will be around anymore because Nick Fury won't be making him.
That was I mean, of all the sins, that was the most sinny one, I think. I mean, that's a real big one.
Yeah.
You know, think of those Stern Burn stories of Cap with the original S.H.I.E.L.D. and Dum Dum and.
I'll tell you right now, though, I'm on Nick Fury's side. Like, I get what he was doing, and I totally agree with him, and so does Winter Soldier. That's why he's doing it now.
Well, I was wondering what they would do with the Winter Soldier, because he can't be out and in the public, so they have to find a role for him where he's not
a perfect
on TV
man
or whatever.
For the job, if you ask me.
In Daredevil, we learned in Daredevil 6 that Matt sees a vision of his father, who's a big boxer type, right? A big thug type. He appears to have abused Daredevil's mother, and that might have been what drove her away to the convent on some fatal night, where she's laying there in tears on the floor, astrewn broken furniture, and he is looking pretty guilty and standing there with Matt in his arms. But as the story goes on, Matt confronts his mom and learns that she was like postpartum depressed and a total nut job, and she was like hurting herself and others, and she was in a total rage that night and basically hurt herself, and the dad was just standing there like, this has all gone really bad, and where do we go from here? And she ran off to the convent based on that.
I was almost so disappointed because I thought it was that he was abusing her, because I remember him being so nice, I think, in the comic, wasn't he?
This could have been a total disaster, and I'm like, oh, where is this going? But, you know, in Wade we trust, and he turned it, not really turned it around, but, you know, revealed other parts of the story, and then I think it's one of the better original scenes.
I've never seen his mom brought up at all before.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, that's
she's
the big
Born
Again.
She's showing up in, like, what was it, Born Again and other modern things.
Anytime there's a nun in a Daredevil story.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, okay.
So it's his mom.
A lot of ones I haven't read, then, yeah.
I remember people got upset, though, when they... Like, there was an unspoken thing, and then I think it was Kevin Smith or someone like that who, like, sort of said it explicitly, and I remember some people were upset, like, I can't believe you just said that was Daredevil's mom.
Well, remember when we did our big Daredevil retrospective thing in the final issue of his Volume 1 series, 300 and something, whatever it was... The one that ended with just a big explosion and everything. At the end, it's him walking off with her, like licking ice cream cones.
Yeah,
it was pretty weird. So they like tied it. I think it was pretty well established, if not outright said.
Sometimes we get hung up on weird things.
Yes. But I just mean for Kevin Smith's story to be the very next Daredevil volume story, it wasn't that far from that last appearance ever. Here's a weird one, guys. This one doesn't go down without some bittersweet taste, that's for sure. In Original Sin 5.1 through 5.5, it's a Loki and Thor story. And we learn that a 10th realm exists beyond the 9 realms of the mythology you've always known. And the 10th realm is, of course, Angela's realm.
Angela.
And Angela, the Gaiman McFarlane Spawn character, is actually Odin's daughter and Thor's sister. What?
I guess that's okay. I kind of enjoyed the missing city, different realm thing better when it was like an eighth city in Immortal Iron Fist. But anyhow.
I got to tell you, at first I wasn't excited about Angela coming over to the Marvel Universe, but I find she works really well with it. Like, I like her part in Guardians, just her interaction with Gamora.
But they already have a Gamora. I think she's shoehorned in. And Asgard already has a Sif. And didn't they do a whole Sif is Thor's sister bit one time, too? So it's like, oh, come on.
Well, I wish she stayed with the Guardians instead, because I found she worked well with that team. But yeah, it doesn't bother me that much, that one. She is kind of Asgardian looking, really.
You mentioned Gamora over in the Guardians of the Galaxy. Yep. It's a three-part story from Guardians of the Galaxy 18, 19, and 20.
Everyone's been waiting for years.
20 hasn't come out yet. And if you guys listened to Kevin and I covering the Abnett and Lanning Guardians series that ended with the Thanos imperative, we were ended with the big cliffhanger of whatever happened to Peter Quill and Thanos and Drax, and how did they get back to the Marvel Universe, and where's Rich Rider, the old Nova?
The best Nova.
And this is telling the story, written by Bendis, drawn by guest artist Ed McGuinness, which is great. The third part of the three-parter hasn't come out yet, so we actually don't know how it resolves. But the sin here is basically that Peter somehow likely used the cosmic cube to save himself, Drax, and Thanos at Richard Rider's expense.
But it just doesn't make sense that he would do something to harm him, though, so... I'm thinking Nova sacrifices himself or something.
Thanos was willing to save them all, and they were all stubborn, and I really like how that everyone seemed pretty in character. It was interesting.
That's good.
They should have trusted Thanos.
Except Peter Quill's blonde. It's like he was brunette.
He's all over the place. His gun changes all the time. They don't know what's going on with Star-Lord and Marvel.
All right, over in the X-Men realm of things, in Uncanny X-Men 24 and 25, we got a couple of sins here.
This is a kicker.
I don't know what to say about this one.
We got the reading of Xavier's will now that he's died at the end of the whole AVX thing.
For like the third time.
And we learn that before, part of his will and testament is connected to the fact that he married Mystique right before his death.
What? Or
sometime before his death.
Why?
I remember when he was sending her on missions and stuff. I liked that when McKeever, or not McKeever, who was it who wrote those issues?
No, it was Vaughn McKeever? And then McKeever.
Yeah, okay. That was a good little series there, and I liked her connection to him in secret in that series, but wow, they got married, huh?
This is beginning to be like Black Widow, like who else?
She's done it with everybody.
Yeah.
And also, Xavier lied and manipulated to kind of hypocritically demutantize this uber-powerful mutant rather than kind of help him learn how to use his powers and identify with himself as a mutant.
Do you know his reasons for that? Because it seems like he's always willing to help out them, you know?
Yeah, it seemed like he said it was too... The guy was too powerful, it was too dangerous, and at the time, and this is at the same time around X-Men number one starting way back when, he thought that he would be a danger to the school and he would be the self-fulfilling prophecy of the humans who hate and fear them, that the way that they were going to be introduced to the public was going to be through exactly what they fear the most.
Glad he never brought Mimic or Wolverine to the school.
What a hypocrite.
That's what everyone's saying. Scott was totally ticked off. The whole school is built on a lie, and every year he's gone to check up on him. Every year he's gone to check up on him and make sure the barriers are still in place. And, of course, now the story is that this guy's out there and he knows the deal, and
that's
cool. Now they got to deal with him.
Was he in a containment facility like Silk or
He wiped out his memories of and his access to his powers, and he visited him like at an orphanage as like a friend, and then kind of when the kid was old enough to realize that this other kid was just some weird kid who kept coming to talk to him about his innermost feelings, he revealed himself to be Xavier, but then erased his memory when they would talk. So he just continually violated this dude.
Steve, I got to say, Xavier lying and manipulating people, I am shocked.
He might have had the right idea, though, because look, now they have Apocalypse at their school.
And the last one, and it's the one we all know was going to come around as things do come around when they're done, Cap figured out that the Illuminati does exist and that he was a part of it and that they mind wiped him out of the group back in
the
Avengers.
That was so good. But that's because you were waiting for that moment ever since it happened to him. Or,
yeah. I always love that kind of story.
Yeah, because you're like, this is going to come around and you're waiting for the payoff. So, yeah, this felt natural.
The first issue is really cool, too, when he confronted them with he just brought a team of Avengers with him, and they didn't know what was going on, and it was just so cool when they confronted Tony. So,
and then it got weird.
I mean, yeah, time traveling.
Yeah, that's why I only talked about the first issue.
It got all Franklin Richards-y. Yeah.
Yes, very.
You only need the first part, really, for Original Sin.
Yeah, they kept on labeling it Original Sin, but really, like, after that, like, it ties more into like the big story, not really the Original Sin story.
Now, in the side series, the Original Sins, they did a few things, you know, had some insights on some characters and things, but nothing rose to the level of actually being like a lie or a sin or anything. But they would just have these little silly cameo things, like that Howard the Duck's really smart, and then J. Jonah Jameson thought Spider-Man might be a good thing right at first, but then changed his mind. Nothing that
that's not new though. There's some of those old stories. He's had a few panels where he would be leaning back, going, "Oh, am I just going after him because I'm embarrassed of who I am?"
Yeah, like
that's not any. That's already been mined back. The real Original Sin is that Ditko ever left Spider-Man. That didn't get read. That's the Jack's treatment. I mean, there's lots of Original Sins for Marvel, and so far none of them seem to have been raised.
Yeah, well, fortunately, they didn't take this opportunity to totally screw everything up and and ruin any characters, truly.
They could have done so many cool sins, like...
Yeah, a lot of these things they could just ignore and move on.
But overall, though, I loved the main series.
It was beautifully drawn by Diodato. I like his stuff.
Worked well monthly compared to other events.
Yeah.
You know, Phil, you seem to like the events that are, like, panned. From the people that I listen to and read about.
I didn't feel like there was enough of a payoff of the variables that got put into play. Like a bunch of the side tracks and the clues that were tracked down and things.
Well, there's still like a one shot.
Yeah, but they didn't come together in any big, like, aha. You know, they weren't cogs that were part of the wheel, really. They sort of had to be explained away in a way at the end. Like, so what was Nick doing with the, you know, it was.
Well, hopefully we'll get some of that in Winter Soldier.
When they invest so much time on side paths and side quests, I want them to really fit into the justification behind everything, and that didn't happen.
Yeah,
the art looks pretty cool for Winter Soldier. That's one thing I'll say.
I haven't seen it yet, just the covers.
And the new Watcher seems strange.
Is it a female or a male?
I don't want to spoil it.
Okay. Oh,
I will say that at the special edition that came out digitally, they showed the original pages before the pencils, before the inks and colors, and they showed the original last page and the original design of that final Watcher, and they had them remove something that he was wearing on his face.
Well, I'm guessing it's the person with the cloak.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Tethered to the moon, only watching. But
I thought
not
I knew who
eye.
It was, but now I'm second guessing myself.
I think the old Watcher was pretty weird. The giant, big, baby-headed freako wearing a toga, looking at everybody.
I love the Byrne version of him with the even bigger head, where he's like the awesome android head. Hey, I got it. Something else I got to bug you guys with. I've been just trying to catch up on a lot of stuff here and there, because you guys know that I sort of bi-monthly, but read in big chunks, like their trades almost. But I am all caught up with All New Invaders. That's written by James Robinson with art by Steve Pooh. All New Invaders 9 and 10. Deathlok, everybody. And a Deathlok story that I approve of.
You mean the real Deathlok?
Luther Manning Deathlok. The first and true Deathlok. They're looking for Toro, and our modern invaders chase down this German terrorist, Kurt Dagmar. It makes me think of the Zappa tune, but...
And Dagmar,
without a doubt, the ugliest son of a bitch I've ever seen in my life,
was his name.
What?
He's got this ridiculous collection, Dagmar does, of deathlocks, and they're like cross-dimensional. It's like every deathlock possible, right? And he's hanging with Colonel Luther Manning, the real deathlock, and he's controlling him, but Deathlock is totally acting in character, Luther Manning is, which is great. They reveal that the Kurt Dagmar guy, he gets killed, and he's a Martian. A Martian like the Killraven Martian. And at the end of this two-parter, there's a suggestion that Killraven might not be far behind to appear in this series, which is really cool.
Yeah, I heard, yeah, he is coming.
And the Deathlocks, it's, you know, Luther Manning has a good moment and saves the day, and he interacts with Captain America, and Captain America is totally respectful of Manning, knowing that the state that he and all these other Deathlocks in are a result of their dedication to their country and kind of the outcome of them giving themselves and their all to their country, and they were made into these. And when he comes up to Manning at the end, he's like, Colonel, and Deathlock's like, Captain, and it was just a really cool meeting between the two, and they all go to their respective timelines and futures and everything. And we are essentially, the regular 616 is ridded of all these other alternate versions of Deathlock that have been appearing and been stored and been used, and probably paving the way for this new Deathlock series, I would assume.
Yeah, there's even a Deathlock in Uncanny Avengers.
I haven't gotten there yet. I'm not caught up.
With Captain America leaving the team, do you think the comic will work still, like, as well?
Leaving which team? The Invaders?
Yeah, because he's old now, isn't he?
Cap? No.
What do you mean? I thought he became an old man at one point, or because the serum, like, coming up, or maybe it didn't happen yet?
Not in the Invaders.
I don't know if that's going to affect their Invaders.
That's happened so many times. Cap's gotten old because of the serum thing. Sheesh.
Well, we got the new Cap, Falcon.
Oh, that's what's going to happen. He's going to get old, and that's why the Falcon's going to be the new Cap?
It's already happened.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'm catching
up,
guys.
I thought it was already out. I just thought it was
already out.
Okay.
I'm way behind on Cap and Thor. The Avengers solo series, I'm way behind on, but I'm caught up on the group stuff and a lot of the ancillary stuff.
Oh, it makes me laugh so hard Thor can't pick up his hammer right now.
I think people were clamoring for Return of the Old Nomad, Steve. So that's what's
happening. Oh, that's another subtle reference.
What have you guys been reading? Anything good?
The latest Daredevil was really creepy. It's almost going into like territory of like the dark, like Bendis Brubaker type of thing. Because the cover has like all these children that are purple, and they're only their eyes are showing. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, what's going on here? And it's like the children of the Purple Man. So I'm thinking back in the day, like, I don't know exactly you remember how his powers worked back in the day, Steve?
Pheromones.
Yeah.
He was always...
I think as time has gone on, he's gotten more and more creepy and more crazy and powerful and everything.
As soon as Bendis used him in that Jessica Jones Alias series, after that, he was really evolved.
But I think he's always been sort of like that way, because like anyone that can control you, it's like, what are you going to do type of thing.
Well, I think writers realize that that's a lot more problematic than in the old days when it was just... Because as we joked earlier, Professor X mind wiped people left and right.
He didn't care. But anyways, the Purple Man, he's been sleeping with all these people, apparently without, you know... I don't think they had much say in the matter. Or maybe they did, but, you know, Purple Man. So, there's like all these children out there now that are like... Purple Man's children.
With and the powers?
Like, yeah. That's what I mean. So,
do they have them individually, or is it a collective thing? Like, they have to be many to have the strength of the power?
Well, this is sort of the story. It's like he's been doing this for a reason. So it's like if they try to control him with the powers, one of them doesn't have enough strength. But all of them together can, like, control the Purple Man himself. So, like, all this weird stuff is going on, like, some people are getting killed and all this stuff, and it's, like, the Purple Man's, like, grand scheme is, like, he I guess he's a lonely guy, because he's controlling everyone. So he can't get certain things. Like he wants, I want someone to love me unconditionally and everything. So that's why he's been getting a gang of kids together type of thing. But then they reject him and start controlling him. And it's like, wow, this is, like, becoming a real dark story.
Wow.
Like, in a way, it's, like, half the issue is, like, a Purple Man story. Like, there's some daredeviling and stuff like that, but that's, like, off to the side, not really related. So I'm assuming Daredevil's going to have to fight children, or, like, it's going to be some messed up stuff.
Yeah. Cool.
But that, yeah, that was really interesting.
I've been, we have all new number one, Spider-Man 2099.
I hope that was good.
By name familiar to most, Peter David's the writer, Will Sliney's the artist, Antonio Fabella, colorist, and Joe Caramagna, letterer. First issue, we're introducing Spider-Man 2099, and I didn't want to be like this, but the art is reminds me of the sort of photo reference-y kind of stuff. I don't know if he does that or not, but, you know, the kind of stiff feeling, like there, Liz Allen features in the book.
Who is she again?
She's an old Spider, the original.
Oh, yes.
From
she was a classmate who Spidey liked, who ended up dating Flash Thompson, and then ended up marrying Harry Osborn.
Yeah, she's mean.
Yeah, in the old days she was mean, and here she's kind of back to that.
Yeah.
But just that sort of artwork where it looks kind of like, and I think people like that. Some people
I like it.
But for me, that art really, it just doesn't, it's not what I want in a comic book in a way. Like, I want more sort of comics in my comic book, unless what the feeler.
Weren't you buying that Defenders book that he was writing, like, longer than anyone, like, the rest of us did?
Yeah, and for some reason, I thought the art in there was more tolerable, or more liking. It seems like they've really taken a step in. Now, a lot of this is, there's a lot of dudes out of outfit. And maybe it's being the out of outfit or something. I wish someone else had looked at this.
I actually like the artist's work, but not on Spider-Man. Spider-Man takes a little bit too much dynamic athleticism in his movement in his panels and stuff. And I think that stiffness really works against his depiction of Spider-Man as a character.
But I was about to say I like that.
that's why, hey, different strokes, buddy. But I like his work overall, and I like how he draws other heroes and stuff.
Yeah, I don't know, just the Liz Allen one just didn't, I don't know, it looked weird to me. I mean, not bad, I just don't like that excessively. To me, it looked photo-referenced pretty heavily, and that was not what I want out of a book. I like goofy, kind of cartoony, especially, I don't know. That was where I was stood on the artwork. So that kind of put me a little bit to something where I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if it's got me. I mean, it's a fun character. Basically, it's reminiscent. I wasn't a huge fan of the cartoon, but it seems in some way like his most recent cartoon appearance where he has to sort of protect the person to sort of worry about his future. But in Marvel Comics, like, time travel is such a goofy thing to begin with. It seems like stacking time travel stories up is always risky.
Yeah, well, I think that's part of the thing of the Marvel Universe in general now is, like, get your time travel stories in now because we're using it as part of the whole universe's narrative that it's all falling apart because of all the time travel and dimensional rips that are going on. But you should have, or not that you should have, but you could have established that he's trapped in our time. That's the whole thing of the book. It's Spider-Man 2099 in our time, and he's realizing that he has to sort of mind and take care of the frivolous behavior of the ancestor of one of his villains in his own old title, who ended up being like his father, right? Or related to him, or his grandfather or something.
Right. That was his last, I think it was in that Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon, or whatever his last cartoon appearance. It was this entire story where he's in our time protecting the future. So sometimes he has to do things he doesn't want to because he has to maintain the integrity of the time sphere, whatever they call it in Marvel nowadays.
Yep.
And you just think like Kang should just come in and like clear the slate or something.
I read a time travel story that I really enjoyed that was a done in one. And you guys may all groan, and there was a time where I would have joined you, but I've come around over the last few years, and we don't talk about Deadpool enough on this podcast. Deadpool number 26. I caught up on Deadpool. It's way beyond issue number 26, but issue 26 really stuck out to me as a gem, written by Jerry Duggan and Brian Posehn, with art by Scott Koblish, who's the guest artist for this issue. It's a done-in-one that jokes that it's an old inventory story of Sergeant Fury and the Howling Commandos. And it's presented in retro style with faux worn newsprint, and like the color is done in dot patterns and classic layouts. And even is drawn like in a sort of Maurice Severin kind of a style. And Deadpool goes back in time and joins in on this adventure. And, you know, Fury's fighting Hitler and a giant robot mech. And it's like all kinds of good wartime fun. And Cable ends up guest starring almost out of nowhere, but it all makes sense. And he saves the day. And it's really cleverly done. It ends with Hitler totally blown to bits, like Swiss cheese, by Fury and Deadpool and Cable as a firing squad, and then they put him in place in Hitler's bunker and like shout that like, all right, I've got to end it all and take off. And then they show the guard's face when they like discover the apparent famous Hitler suicide in his bunker. He's shot to pieces, and he's just got the one, you know, pistol in his hand, and they're like, they look at each other like, it's so freaking funny. And then even though it's issue number 26, it broke the narrative from what issue 25 was and what number 27 will be. Issue 26 actually continues in Deadpool number 20. It goes back in this feedback loop. It's really cleverly done, but it's a really funny done in one, and it's worth it just for the Fury Hitler. It might be your new favorite Fury story.
It sounds cool.
It's really like good.
I like how Cable shows up too.
Koblish is so local funny. And he's just the nicest guy. I think he brings that flexibility, like you were saying. I feel like he can lend him his style, and because he's been around and knows his stuff. It's really nice to see him do that type of stuff, because remember, he was worked on the OMAC too to help kind of blend his inks to that. And I think he's kind of an underrated guy overall.
And he jumps into those classic styles so nicely. And remember how we were talking about the Deadpool, that Infinite comic that was him with the vampire queen that he was going to be Dracula's bride? He ended up marrying her in his own series, and they had this whole honeymoon romp and everything. And because all these other vampires were chasing them, he comes up with like a kind of a small team of people to team up with to help him out. And he goes back in time and grabs Dazzler back from her old series, like Disco Dazzler. And she's using like all her old dialogue from the 80s, and he wants her because she can shoot light, right? And totally, she's a vampire's worst nightmare in a lot of ways. But there's a panel where she's like totally freaking out her face, and they're like, what? And she's like, I just saw what Fantastic Four comics have become, or something like that. And there were just some nods like that where we're totally up my alley. And Dazzler with the blue face paint on and everything, and the roller skates and the glittered necklace. Oh, hilarious.
You should team her and Iron Man up to go retro with roller skates again.
Yeah, like in that What If, the comedy What If, they had them roller skating together. What else is out there?
I would say that if you're going to catch up on Avengers, now would be a good time with the whole...
Oh, yeah.
With the whole 8 months left to go.
Yeah, I've been tempted to jump in here.
Yeah, time is running out because New Avengers, the last few issues, a lot of big payoffs for... what's been building in that book. Like, I just can't believe the cliffhangers. And then you jump forward in time, and you're like, wow. Like, a lot of stuff is going to be going down.
And more Thanos.
Yes, that's true. That too.
And you know you can count on all of these seemingly spending a lot of time on these, again, I'll just, for lack of a better way, since I presented them that way earlier, is these little side quests and tangents and stuff. You know, because of his history on Fantastic Four, Hickman's as a writer, that all of these things are going to come back and mean something and be explained and be cool and be aha-ish at the end.
Yeah, so many of those things are coming together, and he gets a touch on Dr. Doom again in the latest one.
Yeah.
So it's just like, yes. But so many crazy things are happening in some of these books. I'm just like, I can't believe that just occurred. It's just, it's so nuts. Oh, so good, though. I'm really, really looking forward to everything that's coming up with the Hickman Avengers stuff.
And this isn't even the final peak of his stuff, right? I mean, this is one. This is the fake ending, and then there's still going to be another, change status quo and another build up to the big thing where both series all come together in his big, however many year plan it was. I make the mistake sometime of dividing the number of issues by 12 to get a sense of how many years he's been on the book, but that doesn't work anymore with Marvel.
No, it doesn't. But yeah, I see he's not necessarily doing Avengers World anymore, but there's still a lot of Avengers out there that he's doing. And it's like Infinity, it seemed like that was the whole, like one whole thing that was done. You're like, okay, that was good. And now it seems like we're running off on another whole thing, and that's like climaxing. But it's always like, it's like you're on the top of a hill, and you see like another giant hill that you still need to climb.
You bet. Very cool. On the Thanos front, that Thanos Infinity revelation, I know I mentioned it in my Baltimore debriefing, that was written and drawn by Starlin with Andy Smith inks. Awesome. He even included the pieces of like Thanos's, minions that he had from Infinity. He drew them in kind of hanging around in Thanos's ship, and so that it ties him right into things. And he makes reference to acting strangely and going off on all these odd adventure-y things, and he finds himself questioning his own behavior, which is all a really clever way to identify that he's really returning to his true voice and his creator writing him and drawing him in the series. And it's another thing where it's like a quest search for enlightenment and power and meaning and all that. Love those stuff.
Again.
Love it. Love these Starlin quests.
That's all he does.
He figures the thing out. He comes to terms with death and that whole deal in a big way. And it's just so comfortable to see and read Thanos done by Starlin. So good.
You know, speaking of those, I don't know what you call them. Like, I guess they're not OGNs. I forget what the name of the line is, but I picked up that Amazing Spider-Man Family Business art cover in Fan Expo. Because I was like, I might as well. I saw it for a good price. So, yeah, game.
Any of these that you see at a good price, I really suggest picking up. They've all been good, and they are calling them OGNs. They're calling them Marvel OGNs.
Yeah. Okay.
I do want to get them, but yeah, they are a steep price, like at full price for the page count, I find.
Yeah,
like,
I hear you.
It's pretty expensive.
Yeah, but I'm surprised at like the size. Like, I still can't get over that. Like, they're just a little bit bigger, and you're like, oh, yeah, that's kind of a cool format. But yeah, it seems like all pretty cool stuff in them.
The art in that Spider-Man one, you're going to love pouring through that, and the story is really fun.
And it's James Robinson, right?
Yeah.
It is, yeah. It's Wade Robinson and Del Otto.
Oh, and Wade?
Yep.
I picked up, like, all the Guardians and Star-Lord comics, and I just got lost in the worst Guardians ever.
I've just been catching up myself. I'm still finishing Acts of Vengeance and then Age of Ultron, so
I've been reading the latest in Marvel. I've been like catching up on some sort of recent series on Marvel Unlimited. So I finished off the previous Secret Avengers with Mockingbird, Taskmaster, MODOK, and a whole lot of other fun stuff.
That was weird, wasn't it?
Yeah, like when that series started, I'm like, I wasn't really into it. And as it goes on, it gets into all this cool AIM stuff and everything, and I'm like, wow, this is really coming around.
How
and
hilarious.
It gets real nutso.
Yeah, how hilarious was the MODOK and Maria Hill, like, back and forth, and when they're dealing with each other and negotiating? That the whole series was gold just for that.
Yeah, and the MODOK's like, I would like a sandwich or whatever.
This is Secret Avengers?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've really wanted to pick that up, yeah, because supposedly the MODOK stuff is just awesome. Right? Yeah,
it really
but
is.
I kind of wonder, it starts with Nick Spencer, and then at some point you have another writer come in. I think another couple of writers come in. And I kind of wonder if like that was the original plan, or like how much influence there is like to change the... Because it like really turns around, and it's still becoming more interesting with Nick Spencer on it, but it goes from kind of dark to it gets a little kooky.
I was catching up on some of the four-issue limited series that pop up here now and again. I finished off the last of the books from 2013 that I had to read, which was Longshot Saves the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, that looked cool.
I didn't really care for it, to be honest with you. It was okay enough, but it was kind of trying to give Longshot a purpose in some way, but I don't know. Something about it didn't capture me.
Could you spoil the purpose? Because I haven't read it, but I love Longshot.
No, I can't. Spoil.
Darn! It. Now I have to.
Just read the last issue.
Yeah. Yeah, I could do that. Yeah.
And I also read the 4-issue Deadpool versus Carnage. I realize it's another Deadpool, but this is just as much Carnage as Deadpool, and those seem to be the two properties that they are really churning out a lot of these 4-issue limited series of. So it's kind of funny that they would combine them. It's crazy meets crazy, right?
Was it just the one big fun battle, pretty much?
It was Pursuit and a series of battles.
Okay.
Glenn Fabry covers, and Cullen Bunn wrote it, and Salva Espin very adequately drew it. It's pleasing to the eye. It is really graphically bloody, though, not for kids. Deadpool gets the idea to hunt and track Carnage. He gets the idea while he's channel surfing, and Carnage had just done some Carnage, and there was a news story about him. So about on every third or fourth channel he channel surfs to, they're mentioning something about Carnage. And as he's flipping through about 20 channels, he, in his psychotic mind, picks up this unrelated audio stream that basically suggests you probably should go get Carnage and do something about him. And he tries to hunt him down. He's crazy, so he thinks, you know, crazy knows crazy. So while Cassidy, Carnage, is thinking he's acting so chaotically and crazily with no pattern or rationale or predictable behavior, Deadpool is able to catch up with him multiple times, much to Carnage's chagrin, and then they will, do battle, and Deadpool will get all sliced up and that kind of thing. The battles are wild, right? Carnage likes to inviscerate people and lop off body parts, and Deadpool likes to grow them back. His Carnage's gal pal, the pale female Shriek, shows up too. And in the finale, Deadpool gets combined with a symbiote-coated dog, okay, to take on Carnage. And they're connected by, a tether of symbiote material, so it looks like he's walking the dog. It's cool. It's a really whacked out visual. And I won't spoil the whole resolution, but Shriek gets accidentally mortally wounded by Carnage, much to Carnage's regret. And it's kind of like a Luther, and at the end of the Luther Strode series that we talked about over on Indie Comic Noise this past week on, what's that, episode 349. But it's that kind of a ending. But I won't spoil how they part ways, but Carnage manages to shake Deadpool.
Sounds like it should have been a Max title, maybe.
It practically was. Practically was. If there was some cursing, it would have been all out. They wouldn't even have to change the art. All right, gang. What do you think? Want to wrap this one up?
Sure.
Well, that doesn't exactly glue me to my seat. So, but we will be back in a couple of weeks with some more noise making in the Mighty Marvel style, as we are wont to do. We've got Halloween coming up for a themed episode, and I know I've got a war segment planned with a listener who suggested producing such a segment around the time of Veterans Day, reliving all of the old Marvel War books over the decades, which should be fun.
Cool. I think Andrew has some Thunderbolts coming up, too.
All right. That was awesome last episode, guys. More Thunderbolts.
Justice like lightning.
Marvel's most wanted.
Thanks, guys. This was fun. Until the Punisher's mother is revealed to be Peggy Carter, would Cap then possibly be his dad? Make mine Marvel.
Later.
Well, up and down the puppy's hair, please, and text your farewells. Souls of original sin. Don't make hear about Jack and Jill and you can. It's humbling after some original sin. So rip away the sin. Drink a hope to happy end. And you may find a lifetime has passed you behind. Why the word you say? Don't trust the big one. You are a monkey on a string. Don't cut my lifeline. Donkey on a chain. Don't bite the mailman. What do you say? Well, I was there when the bear ate his head. I thought it was a candy. Everyone goes in the air. Knock, knock on the door. Who's it for? There's nobody. Look in the mirror, my friend. I don't understand at best. You cannot speak for all the rest. When the morning rises, a lifetime's passing by. Oh, what would you say? Don't drop the big one if you were a monkey on a string. Don't cut my lifeline if you were doggy on a chain. Don't bite the mailman. What would you say?